Okay, good morning. It is 9:57 a.m. We are here today, July 6, 2016, in the OPA Hearing Room, Suite 907 of the DNA Building in Hagatna, Guam, for the formal hearing of OPA-PA 16-003 and 16-005 TLK Marketing versus the Guam Visitors Bureau. Presiding over the hearing today are Hearing Officer Peter C. Perez and Public Auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Yuka Hachinova and Jarek Hernandez. At this time, will Appellant TLK please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning. Joyce Tang, Joshua Walsh, and Sarah Fitzpatrick, our assistant, is here for TLK. And with me, the institutional representative is Mr. Lee.
Thank you. Will Purchasing Agency GBB please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, good morning. My name is Thomas Fisher. I am an attorney representing the Guam Visitors Bureau in this appeal. This morning, and seated to my left is Mr. John Nathan DeKnight, who is the president of the Guam Visitors Bureau as institutional representative.
Thank you. We may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
With respect to timing, if we can, we should try to get this case done today. Do the parties think that we can get the presentation of evidence and arguments done today?
How long? Might be difficult, but how long do you expect to go today?
We can go beyond five if necessary.
Okay, is that the goal? And then if that doesn't happen, I mean, then we can waive closing, but tomorrow, is there any time available for tomorrow?
We'll have to confer and then an alternative time.
So the goal is to try to get it done as quickly as possible.
Right, because TLK has asked for expedited proceedings, and there's going to be periods of off-island travel for both the public auditor and myself, and she wants to get a decision out quickly.
So what we'll do is this, if I may. We can shorten lunch a bit. Sometimes you're a little more lax about that. We're fine with that to accommodate this. And I'm prepared to go beyond 5 o'clock if your schedule permits. I don't think it's efficient to have all of the witnesses sitting here. I think certainly my first witness is going to be Mr. DeKnight, and that will take probably a little longer than most of the other witnesses because he's the main witness. I think we can certainly take him through lunch and try to get as much done, and then maybe instead of keeping everyone here, have him come back in the afternoon or notify them as you did in the other cases where so that they don't have to run down to Gania. But we can give them a tentative time. Does that work?
Yes. Well, who are in the back are going to be witnesses?
I believe it's Ms. Tidewee, Mr. Baldiga, Mr. Kim, Mr. Shinohara, and Mr. Jackson, I'm sorry, I don't know you.
Sorry, PDN.
Oh, okay.
Okay, PDN. Okay.
So how many witnesses total?
I think we have, I think we're missing Mr. Averisto and Pangolinan and Kono. But I think, those are the three we're missing.
We'll have to escort all the witnesses downstairs to our conference room. But if you don't think you're going to need them before lunchtime,
that's what I'm suggesting.
Then they could be excused to come back.
Early. And then we can call them if they can give.
And who will be the first witness afterwards?
I'd like to call Mr. Baldiga.
Okay, so then he should be. Then the others could come in a little bit later.
Right. Yeah, and then if he could just give his contact number, so when we're getting close to that time, then that might be a lot more accommodating. We won't keep everybody waiting and running back and forth between again and whatever.
Yes, I agree. I think that's a good idea. I'd like to get it done today if we can. Maybe release them, except for obviously Mr. DeKnight, subject to a telephonic recall. But I do have one request. Ms. Tidegree has a medical appointment this morning, and she'll be leaving island, I think, tomorrow morning.
We'll take her today.
To accommodate her schedule.
Her appointment's at 11:30.
That's all after lunch?
Let me see if she will be available.
Okay. I won't after 3.
Okay. That's fine.
So immediately after lunch?
Immediately after lunch is fine.
Okay.
So we'll take Ms. Tidegree before Mr. Baldiga?
That's fine.
To accommodate that schedule?
So what time, Ms. Tang, do you want to come back after lunch?
I am open
from lunch
to whatever schedule you propose.
Do you want to do 1 o'clock?
Well, what, depending on how long it takes us, because if he, if you, will you take him all the way through lunch?
Yes.
Okay, so for the next 2 hours or so?
Yes.
So 1 o'clock, well, 1 o'clock will start. So 12, so if it goes to 12:15, 12:30, we'll still start at 1 o'clock.
That's right. Okay, thank you.
So do the witnesses need to stay on the premises, or can they just be subject to telephoning?
Can we just get your contact information?
Yes. I think the two will be Ms. Tidigui, then Mr. Baldiga, then I don't know what's the rest of the order.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think I'd like to just find out what the status of Ms. Kono is.
Was she served?
She's like a I'm sorry?
Was she served for this appeal?
No, I'm just saying, where is she?
I don't know.
Okay,
who is Ms. Kono?
Where's Ms. Kono?
Oh, she's on annual leave in Seattle, so she'll be attending.
Oh, okay, that's very convenient. All right, so, okay, so we can recall the others this afternoon.
Okay, so after Mr. Baldiga, who will be next? So we'll know who will be next after Mr. Baldiga.
You already have your order established, or you're going to wait and see?
I beg your pardon?
You already have your order of witnesses determined, or you're going to wait and see?
We'll probably wait and see, we're going to try to be a little more efficient. Mr. Pangalina should be showing up any minute, so.
But he'll have to be excused.
Right, he's been subpoenaed, but we just need to put him on call.
So you'll do Mr. Denite, then Ms. Tidigui, and then
Mr. Baldiga.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Then we'll have to ask the rest of you to be excused, if you could leave the hearing, with the exception of the PDN report.
You can't see.
Do they need an escort?
Well, since they're going to be leaving the premises, that's fine. Yeah.
This is Mr. Annalise.
You didn't write the telephone number, sir.
Oh, why don't you could just come over.
Sign in. No. He just walked in.
We have to see whether or not Ms. Tang wants to make an opening statement. Ms. Tang, do you intend to make an opening statement?
Please. I won't recite the facts.
There are six issues that were raised, but do you agree that two of them may have been resolved already, this issue and the stay issue?
Yes.
Do you agree, Mr. Fisher?
What was the second part?
The TLK has raised six issues in their consolidated appeal, but the issue of timeliness appears to have been determined, and also the issue regarding the automatic stay.
Yes, I agree those have been resolved.
Okay, so there's four remaining issues.
Thank you.
Okay, please proceed.
Good morning.
You can sit down if you feel.
Of course, I can't do it. For an opening, you have to stand up. I just, it's force of habit. It doesn't feel right. Okay. This is an important case. This is an important case because it brings into focus one of the very serious problem in Guam procurement on Guam. We're saying government procurement on Guam. The integrity of the procurement process has been severely undermined. While there are agencies who try to do the right thing, there are agencies who do not. Government agencies believe that they can withhold procurement records, no transparency, secretly award and sign contracts to deprive bidders of the right to seek an automatic stay, and to limit the time in which a protest, boldly threaten opposers with debarment and criminal sanctions if it dares pursue its rights to a fair hearing and adjudication of those claims before this forum or the courts. And they refuse to be held accountable for their actions. Your decision of June 15, 2016 could not be clearer and more on point. Page 3, this is in protest 1, the public auditor finds that TLK was deprived of any meaningful opportunity to protest a procurement award, a procurement prior to award, or to receive the benefits of the automatic stay. This appears to be a trend with procuring agencies awarding contracts concurrently without notifying non-selected bidders in an attempt to limit the protesting period and avoid the automatic stay. The resulting and fundamental unfairness is an issue that will need to be addressed by the Guam legislature in order to protect the rights of the aggrieved parties. We believe that the public auditor has the jurisdiction to stop these violations of procurement law. And we find it in TUGAR 12103, which is subsection A, last sentence. The public auditor's jurisdiction shall be utilized to promote the integrity of the procurement process and the purposes of 5 GCA Chapter 5, that is the procurement law. Let's go to the procurement law, 5 GCA. Section 5001B, subsection 3, 4, and 7, as well as A. Subsection A, 5001A, says, this chapter, with respect to interpretation, shall be construed and applied to promote its underlying purposes and policies. And then it directs, says that the underlying purpose and policies of this chapter, and there's quite a few of them, I think there are 8 of them, but I will focus on the 3 that I think are extremely relevant and important. Subsection 3, to provide for increased public confidence in the procedures followed in public procurement. Subsection 4, to ensure the fair and equitable treatment of all persons who deal with the procurement system of this territory. Subsection 7, to provide safeguards for the maintenance of a procurement system of quality and integrity. When you make a finding of fundamental unfairness, it is telling me that the procurement laws are being violated. And when agencies, government agencies, are not behaving like government agencies, but more like organized syndicates, we need to step up and challenge them. You have the jurisdiction to require that agencies give notices to bidders at the same time. That agencies not deprive bidders of their right to an automatic stay by shortening the time and having secret contract signings. You also have the authority and the jurisdiction to require, which you have done in this case, chief procurement officers to maintain a complete and accurate procurement record and to be held accountable when they do not. All of this is within your jurisdiction. And I would take this to any court on Guam and defend this position. Guam procurement law is far from perfect, but allowing them to go as they are is allowing the fundamental unfairness to go unchecked. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fisher?
Yes, thank you, and good morning again. TLK is essentially given a policy argument right now. There are things about the procurement law that they don't like, but they have failed to identify the sins that they believe we have committed. We heard the words transparency and conceal and threaten. And I understand that they don't like the fact that, you know, the train had left the station and it was too late for them to obtain the automatic stay. And I also, you know, respect what the OPA said in that. And I understand the frustration that that this office clearly feels, but we fundamentally disagree that the power resides here with the OPA to change those aspects of the law. I think, as we said in the motion argument, that that's probably best addressed to the legislature. And, you know, I can see there are compelling arguments, but the question is, in this particular atmosphere, in this context, did we commit a sin? And they haven't identified it. The things that they want as, and you're familiar with this because I think I raised it two or three times, or rather the agency did, two or three times, what they are asking for is kind of a prospective relief that doesn't affect this particular appeal. The idea of the stay has gone by the boards, of course. The other things that they've asked for, that all offerors or bidders be informed at the same time, that's going forward. They haven't, and you know, frankly, I've waited because the auditor asked in the motion hearing, you know, is there a body of law or a particular statute that says everybody has to be named at the same or informed at the same time or not? I couldn't find it, and I don't think TLK found it either. Whether or not it's a good idea to have that is beyond, I think, what's happening in this room today. And, you know, I emphasize that we respect and understand the frustration, but we deal in the context that is presented to us, and where is the sin? And that's what we're here to hear about. You know, they said we weren't transparent. Well, we were transparent. We gave them everything they could possibly want. We opened up the boxes at GVB for them to look at. And as you know from Ms. Fitzpatrick's declaration that we received this morning, maybe it was filed yesterday, you know, they came yesterday at 11 o'clock for the first time to look at the boxes. They were welcome any time prior to that. Don't know what more to say. We're anxious to hear what their evidence is. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Tang?
Just quickly on one housekeeping matter. The notice that the notice that was filed yesterday by GVB attaching additional documents, namely three documents, there was a letter to the Attorney General requesting advice regarding debarring and criminal sanctions against TLK. And then the second document is the a chain email, maybe the third, but I think that might have been the second is a letter, and I'm sorry, the second, okay. I'm sorry, it's the July 1st negotiation memorandum that was drafted, I guess, on Friday. And then the last document is an email, a chain email from Ms. LaGuagna to various members. And if you look closely in between the gaps of the emails, there are deleted texts. It's not a complete chain. We request that you have ordered that GVB produce the entire chain and the document in its completion, because at the very top, it's a communication to HIC and has their logo. And then if you look at between, like in between two emails on the first and second page, it says hidden deleted text. And it's kind of faint, but it's there. So the communications were deleted, and I think if they're going to use that, and if you're going to allow it in, we should have the entire chain in without any deletions. Thank you.
Sure. And if at any point they bring that issue up during the proceedings, then re-raise that issue.
Okay, thank you.
Would you like to call your first witness?
Yes, I would. Thank you. Mr. DeMar, please.
Please state your name for the record.
John Nathan DeKnight.
Do you solemnly swear? Please raise your hand. Sorry. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes. I do.
Excuse me. Good morning, Mr. Benoit.
Good morning.
Just give me a moment, please. I'm sorry. I'm just concerned about the noise. And is there any interference with the typing in the mic?
Right now, no. I think we're okay.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Mr. DeKnight, can you please state your full name for the record?
John Nathan DeKnight.
And what is your, I'm going to just take a little background here. What is your educational background?
I was a graduate of Santa Clara University.
Okay.
1999, and before that I was a graduate of St. John's School in 95.
And what did you study at Santa Clara?
Accounting.
Accounting. So are you a CPA?
I'm not a CPA currently.
Okay. So you're just, you have an accounting major. Mm-hmm. Okay. And after...
I'm not my own heart.
After graduating...
Best major.
I'm sorry?
It's the best major.
Thank you.
Yeah. And after, when did you graduate from college?
In 1999.
And after college, you went directly to, did you go pursue a master?
Oh, I did not, no.
Okay, did you come back and work?
Yes.
And can you tell me what your first job is?
After college or before?
After college, please.
I was an intern at Wise Technology, which is a, surprisingly enough, they made green screen terminals, if people can remember what those were, and then moved into thin client computers. So I was there interning, and then they hired me for about a year after, and then after that I came home and worked for my family at Mark's Motors Honda for my grandfather, Mark Pagnini.
Right. Wise Technology is in California?
Yeah, Santa Clara.
Okay. What was your position?
I was like a, was an intern, and then they hired me on, I was working on a marketing research project, so they kept me on for about, I was supposed to be there 3 months, I stayed a year. And then
when did you return to Guam?
2001.
And the position you held was with your grandfather's company,
yeah,
Honda?
Yeah, it's called Mark's Motors Honda.
Okay. How long were you there?
About 5 years.
What was your position?
I started as the marketing manager, and at the end I was the operations manager.
Okay. And you left in approximately 2006?
2005, I believe.
2005, okay. What position did you hold after that?
Then I went to work for my father at DeKnight Marketing Group as the creative director.
Okay. How long were you there?
I was there until I started at GDB, and I started at GDB in, I think, July 2011. I think I'm coming up on 5 years.
Okay. And what was your position in 2011?
I was the deputy general manager of the bureau.
So you worked under Carl Pendleman?
I did.
All right. For the entire term?
No, Joanne Camacho was there as the GM for 2 years, and then after she moved to DFS, I went to... Carl came in and
I see. So, and then when Carl Pendleman departed, you assumed his position.
Correct.
Right. And would that be in 2015, February?
Yeah, I think that's right.
All right. So you hold the position of GM?
Correct.
Are you also the chief procurement officer for the agency,
that's GDB? Correct.
Okay. Did you, were you required to participate in any classes or seminars relating to procurement?
There are some classes that I will be attending. I haven't attended those yet.
So you haven't had any to date?
The formal classes, I have not.
Okay. Has any of your staff, to your knowledge, received training in procurement?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me who they are?
Well, currently, our management analyst four is Christine Maria Lezama. And, she has been attending the trainings.
And what? I'm sorry, what is her title again?
Technical title is Management Analyst 4.
Okay, missed that. And what specific type of training has she been attending?
The training that the government is offering at GCC, I believe.
I see. And anyone else? Has taken upon themselves to get training?
Yeah, we have, you know, lots of long-term staff and administration. I can't really speak.
Mm-hmm.
I know for sure Chris, because she came on with the Bureau and is currently attending these trainings now.
So. Okay. All right. No one else that you know of?
Yeah, I can't speak
okay.
specifically on that.
All right. So let's talk specifically about this Korean marketing agency marketing contract. What does the agent do, in this case, for GBB? What kind of services would he or she provide?
Yeah, well, they provide the marketing representation services in market, in the country, in the source market, in Korea, in this case. Things they do is public relations, marketing, also sales, working with travel agents, you know, things of that nature.
So instead of having a GBB in Korea, in this case, they would be your extension.
Exactly.
Right. So you would have one, I think there's one in China and Japan and in Russia maybe, I think?
Yeah, we have marketing offices in all the source markets, Japan, Korea, China, Hong Kong, Philippines, and Russia.
Okay.
And Taiwan.
Okay. And these are all wholly funded by GBB?
Correct.
Right. Are any of the funds government funds from the general fund or from any appropriation?
Not from the general fund, but GBB receives its funding as a grant in aid from the Tourist Attraction Fund.
Okay. And the Tourist Attraction Fund is a government source fund, correct?
They're tax, government taxes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's a government tax, but we just call it the Tourist Attraction Fund.
Correct.
If you know, off the top of your head, how much would that be? For this year or last year?
This year or last year?
If you know either year or both years.
I think last year was 38 points, like actual collections, 38.6?
For 2015 it was 36 million.
Okay.
Well, it's a lot of money. Yeah. So this entire amount goes into GBB's budget?
No.
So which portion of it goes into GDB's budget?
Whatever the legislature appropriates to GDB.
All right. And what did you get, what did GDB get in 2015?
For this fiscal year?
Yep.
22.5 million.
Okay. And then do you know in 2016 what that number is?
It was around the same.
Okay. Other than this appropriation, is there any other source of income? Government or otherwise?
Yeah, GBB is actually a membership corporate, public corporation, so
mm-hmm.
we do get membership dues from our members. It depends if it's an election year or off election year, but it ranges between 30 and 50,000. And then GBB also, you know, works with the stakeholders in the industry to get in-kind funding, either through, you know, donations of hotels and airlines and things like that. So we work together with the industry, as is our mandate, to get in-kind.
The membership dues and the in-kind donations are minuscule compared to the appropriated amount of 22 million or thereabouts.
Yeah, quite a bit less.
Yeah, okay. So you're primarily a government-funded agency, if you will.
Primarily government fund. Yeah.
Yeah,
primarily funded by government funds, yes.
Okay. Talk about the RFP. When I say the RFP, we'll be referring to this particular RFP that is at issue, the Korean marketing RFP. And it was issued in November 25th, 2015. Is that your recollection?
That sounds correct.
Okay. And who prepared it? Prepared an RFP, that is.
The scope of work, the marketing department, you know, shares their scope of work, the needs for the representation. But it's fairly standard. You know, like you said, we have this emerging market, so it's pretty much all the needs of the markets are relatively the same. And then it goes into to our management analyst to finalize all the other non-scope of work parts of it.
Let me just break this down. Is there a template that you use?
Pretty much, yeah.
For the agencies, for the different?
We have different types of procurement, but for the marketing representation, it's relatively similar. So there's, we kind of work off the existing template that we have.
I see. And who initiates the process in the office?
Well, this one was through the marketing department, so Pilar Laguna is the marketing manager, and the person overseeing Korea at this time is Gina Kono, as the marketing officer too. So they work together on the scope and then feed that over to the management analyst who will prepare the formal RFP packet.
Now, Ms. Laguna, what's her title?
Marketing manager.
All right. And she's been there a long time, right? GDB, that
is. Yeah, 30 years since 79, I think.
Right. Wow. Okay. And now, so tell me how this gets initiated. Does Ms. Laguna say, all right, we're going to get this out? Or, I mean, who says we need an RFP? Because the contract wasn't over for this particular case. So how did, you know, this conversation of, well, let's get the RFP going, you know, a year and a half ahead of time. So how did that start?
We have been working with TLK for some time now, and I think in this particular case, some of the performance, we were working with TLK, and then they were also working with HIC as a subcontractor, and the two kind of companies, one was doing more sales, one was more doing marketing PR, they weren't working optimally in the market on certain projects. And the Bureau decided that it was in the best interest to look at going out for an RFP to see what kind of offers we could get to work more seamlessly.
So, okay, seamlessly. So that was one of the issues, seamless. You wanted it to be seamless. Is that?
The marketing department thought that we wanted to see what kind of services we could get from, because we had been working with these two, and it just wasn't becoming an optimum situation, working in the market.
Okay. And when did HIC come on board as a, they're a subcontractor TLK, correct? Back before the contract was terminated?
I'm not too sure when they came on board. Maybe you can ask TLK.
Okay. So, all right. And were you involved? Were you on? Were you with GVB when they came on board?
Yeah.
Was that prior to your time?
I think I was there.
You were there when they came on board. And isn't it true that GVB required TLK to take HIC on as a subcontractor, Mr. DeKnight?
Not to my knowledge.
Who would know this?
I'm not too sure, probably your client, or I don't know.
And wouldn't it have to be something that would have to be approved by GVB?
Have TLK sub someone?
Yes.
I'm not too sure.
Okay. Other than you, who is, I guess, at the top of food chain in at GVB, who else would know the answer to this?
As far as
subs coming on board
for TLK?
Yep.
It's really on TLK to create the team that they're going to to use or their resources that they're going to use for a particular project.
Okay. So you didn't have any conversation with TLK or anyone else about, or anyone else in the office about HIC coming on board?
I did not, no.
Okay. Who might have had that conversation with TLK?
I'm not too sure.
Maybe Ms. LaGuardia?
I'm not too sure.
Okay. Do you recall during your tenure, while you were at GVB, or any time you were there, TLK receiving warnings or letters of concern regarding their services?
Yeah, I think just generally TLK it does a good job in the sales side of their duties, but you know, in speaking to the marketing team, they could be stronger in some of the PR and advertising activities, and so I think the marketing team has encouraged them to get that, if they, you know, they're a small office of three people, to get the support that they need to provide the PR and advertising parts of their duties, to have, you know, they don't have it in house to acquire those services to provide that.
Mr. Denai, please answer the question.
Objection.
What was the question?
He was answering.
Has GVB ever given warnings or notices to TLK about its performance?
Oh yeah, sure. We communicate with the agency all the time.
Did you provide written warnings expressing concerns about its performance?
Maybe my team did, I don't know. I can't
figure out. So you don't know?
I just know the discussions with my marketing team.
I'm asking about written warnings or letters expressing concerns. Please answer the question.
Was a written warning provided? Maybe, maybe not.
Okay. And if you did have it, you would have produced it, right?
No.
You wouldn't have given it to us in this proceeding?
These warnings? Is it part of the procurement? Was it part of your FOIA? I mean, if it was part of your FOIA, we would have produced it. If it wasn't, we wouldn't have.
Okay, if these letters were existed, where would they be?
If a letter existed, where would they be? Where would they be, the letters?
Where would it be filed or
kept? Yeah, it would be filed with the Bureau. Probably with marketing. Marketing sent the letter to one of their contractors, they would have it.
Have you yourself ever signed such a letter?
I have not, to my knowledge.
Okay, have you ever reviewed any letter and authorized another employee of GVB to send such a letter to TLK?
I have not, no.
Okay. Ms. Kono is not present today, correct, on Guam?
Correct.
And I think you informed the parties that, or the public auditor, that she's on annual leave, am I correct?
Correct.
And when did she leave?
She left, like, I think two weeks ago or something.
Okay.
Yeah. We were together she went to a show in the States and then took her annual leave after.
Okay, when did that show, when did you return from the show?
When did I return?
Yeah.
I returned last Thursday.
I think it's the 29th. I think there was a document submitted to the public auditor saying that, by counsel saying that you'll be returning that date because the certifications would be delayed until you return. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So that's the same show she went with you on.
Yeah.
So she was aware that she was going to be a witness for this particular hearing, correct?
Objection.
No, she was not.
Please answer the question.
No objection.
The objection is, she's asking him to speculate on the state of mind of Ms. Kono, who I believe was not even subpoenaed.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Benite, do you know whether or not she knew she was going to be a witness?
She did not.
How could
she know when we didn't notice her till you didn't subpoena her?
No, but you did get filings where we identified the parties that we would be subpoenaing from GVB. Did you not receive that document from your lawyer?
Objection.
What's the objection?
The objection is attorney-client privilege.
I'm not asking about communications. I'm asking if he received a filing from the OPA.
She's asking directly about the attorney-client communication.
So just rephrase, Ms. Tang.
All right, thank you.
Well, I was gone from, like, I think June 6th to the 29th, so.
Okay, I understand you travel.
Yeah.
You have a very busy schedule.
Yeah. So
but
as far as Gina knowing about this thing, you asked for the expedited thing, so we try to accommodate you. If you wanted her to be here, then you could have done it at a later date. But, you know.
I see. So that's, if I had moved the hearing date, then you might have accommodated her.
Well, if she's here, she would have been here.
Yeah.
She's not an island.
Okay. When did she submit her annual leave request?
I don't know.
May I ask that for a copy of that annual leave request,
sure. Yeah.
Please? Okay.
I would object to that. That's
right,
undoubtedly a personnel record. I think the larger point is they didn't subpoena Ms. Kono.
Right.
And
I mean,
think that's a personnel
when
record.
When you say you want to ask for
document.
What do you mean you want to produce it when?
I would like to see the annual request to see when it was requested. I'm not trying to get her personal information. You can redact all her personal ID. I just want to see the actual request and the day it was requested and approved. You would approve it, would you not? Or is there someone else who approves it?
It goes to her supervisor.
Who's her supervisor?
Laura.
Okay, so she would approve it. So I'm not asking for her social security number, her salary. I just want to know when it was submitted and when it was approved. That's it.
The only difficulty in saying is we're in the proceeding now, so I mean...
After lunch, if that's possible.
You can ask him the question whether he knows, but to ask him for a discovery at this stage, it seems belated.
Okay. But Ms. LaGuania would have that information, would she not?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you recall when that request might have been submitted?
Gina, just from my time, it usually goes to visit her family in Seattle around this time in July, so...
That's not the question I asked. Do you know when... Do you know
oh,
when
exactly.
Submitted?
No, I just said I don't know when... Submitted, and you asked me for the document, right?
Okay. Ms. Lazama, Christine Lazama,
mm-hmm.
What is her title?
Management Analyst 4.
Whom does she report to?
She reports to our controller, Rose Cutler.
Okay. So she's not in the marketing department?
No.
She does?
She's in administration.
I'm sorry?
Administration.
Is she an admin assistant of sorts?
No, she's a management analyst for.
Okay. And Rose Cunliffe's title is?
Controller.
Okay. So Christine is the one that's, this Christine Lazama is the one who's taking the, currently participating in the procurement seminars or training, correct? Do you require any of your other employees involved in procurement to take the training?
Because she's directly handling the procurement, that's why she's required.
Okay. And Gina Kono does handle procurement as well?
No, just more on the scope of work and the marketing side and communicating with the contractor in the department.
How about Ms. LaGuania? Is she required to, is she involved in procurement?
They're, like I said, same as Gina, more involved in the scope of work. They're the users, so they provide the needs of what they need for their service providers.
Do you think maybe the two of them could benefit from a procurement seminar?
I who's to say they're both 35-plus-year employees. They may have taken one or not, I don't know.
All right. Other than the RFP, do you recall if there were any agenda or addendum that went with this particular RFP? Because I didn't see anybody, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, I don't recall, but if it wasn't in the file, it wasn't.
Okay. No, I didn't see it. I'm just telling you. I just make sure I didn't overlook it. All right, so I'm going to ask you to look at the exhibit. So could I grab our exhibit finder, please? Is this the witnesses for?
Yeah, this is our original.
Okay. They gave it to them.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Do you need one?
Oh, okay, I was wondering, that's when he gave, no, I was thinking, yes, that's for the witness, I thought you would have, you would need it, okay, no. So there are, just so you know, those are TLK's hearing exhibits.
Okay.
And we designate them by numbers, exhibit numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we can do this after and just kind of tag it, spot us there, but there's pages over each exhibit that designate what, which exhibit it is, or identifies the exhibit. So if you flip through it, for instance, exhibit one will be like page, I think, page 3 after the list.
Okay.
And if it would help, can give you a tab, and if you wanted to tab the exhibit number, that could be helpful as well, but that's up to you. Okay?
Sure.
You want to, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you need a pen?
I'm allowed to have a pen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exhibit 1. All right,
yep.
And there are 8 numbering on the bottom left hand, right hand corner. So, and there are also numbers on the upper right hand corner. So in this particular case, just so we're on the same page, I will be referring to the Bates number on the bottom right hand corner for this particular exhibit. All right. So this is the RFP that was issued in November of 2015, correct?
Correct.
And, all right. I just have a question. How many RFPs do you oversee on an annual basis?
Well, you know, it depends year to year on what contracts are expiring and so forth.
If you had to guess, and I understand to guess, how many would you oversee on an annual basis? Would there be a range?
Five, I don't know. Just...
Okay. And are they mostly agency, the type of procurement RFPs would be? For agency services?
For services, yeah.
Are these the type you oversee that get renewed regularly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you RFP out legal work too?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so please go to page 9. Okay, so I'm just a quick question. First line, section 1.0 intent, first sentence. The Guam Visitor Bureau, GVB, is a non-stock, non-profit membership corporation. So, and it goes on to refer to the board below. So, this organization is a government agency, but it's a, I guess, non-profit corporation. Is that what it is? Is that your understanding?
We're not a public agency. We're a non-stock, non-profit membership corporation established by public law.
Right.
And it's almost a hybrid because we have a membership aspect to it.
Yeah.
We're a pure government agency.
Mm-hmm.
The governor would select all the members of the board. Right?
But you're a creature of statute. You were GVB was
yeah.
created by statute.
Yeah. Correct.
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 Okay. And then you use government funds.
Correct.
To
yeah.
support the agency. Okay. And there is a board of 12, board of directors,
mm-hmm.
membership of 12, correct?
Okay.
And that board has, is also, for the board's activities are also direct or controlled by statute. Okay, and this would be the GVB enacting legislation, correct?
Yeah, in addition to the other statutes governing boards of this sort.
Okay.
And our bylaws.
Okay. And the general manager's position is also created by statute.
Correct.
All right, and the role of the general manager is also determined in the statute. Okay. So who do you report to? You as a general manager?
To the board.
To the board, okay. Who does the board report to, you know?
The board report to, well, I mean, they're elected by the membership, so this membership would be responsible to represent the membership, and then they have three legislative appointees and five from the governor's office.
Right. Okay, let's go to page 10. Section 1.1, scope of work. And I won't read the whole paragraph, but paragraph starts with GVB seeks to retain the qualified professional tourism destination marketing agency with a minimum of 5-year extensive and consistent experience working with the Republic of Korea travel trade. Okay, you see that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this requirement of 5-year extensive and consistent experience, this is a requirement of experience that the proposer has to meet under section 1.1 of the RFP. Is that correct?
Correct.
And do you also agree that the experience, the extensive and consistent experience, has to be working with the Republic of Korea, travel trade, Korean government, and the embassy to act as GVB's tourism destination marketing representative?
I'm sorry, the question you asked again.
I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. Do you agree that the five-year extensive and consistent experience has to be, for a proposer, working with Korea travel trade, close relationship with the Korean government and the U.S. Embassy to act as GVB's tourism destination marketing representative? That's a requirement of that. The experience has to be of this nature. That's all I'm asking.
Okay, yeah.
You agree? To direct you to page 28, please. This is the section 2 on evaluation procedure and criteria. Right?
Okay.
Still at exhibit 1. So 2.0, section 2.0, evaluation process. Says selection of the best qualified offer will be based on the qualifications, experience, and commitment of the offeror's lead and support individuals proposed for this RFP. So my question is, the experience that's referenced in this section 2.0 is the experience that we just covered in section 1.1, page 10 of exhibit 1.
Is that correct?
That's a question, yes.
Sure.
Yes. Is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay. And Going down to section 2.2A on the same page 28. And it's under subsection A1. It says, the offeror shall submit an executive summary with a description of how your firm qualifies under the requirements of this RFP, as indicated in section 1.1 GVB objective. You see that section I just read to you?
Yes.
And do you agree that this is the 5-year experience requirement that's required for a proposer? That's what it's referring to here. Mm-hmm. Section 2.2 A subsection 1.
Okay.
Okay. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Going to page 29 of Exhibit 1. In the top portion of the pages of B, subsection B says staff qualifications and past performance. And subsection 1 says the offeror shall provide resumes or a summary of qualification work experience, education, skills, etc., which emphasize previous experience in this area. Do you agree that the experience referred to is the same experience that we're talking about in section 1.1 of this RFP?
Yes.
Okay. Going to page 30. The section is E in the upper half of the page, starting with the header, primary point of contact. The section I would like to direct you to is section 2, E2.
Got it.
Says, offeror shall specify how long the individual slash company submitting a proposal has been in the business providing services similar to those requested in this RFP and under what company name. Do you agree that the type of services are the services that are described in section 1.1 of this RFP?
Yes.
Okay.
But there's also the additional services, in the page listed after, you talk about the scope of work, it goes on to other services, right?
Okay, so did you want to just identify what you were referring to? Pages, or?
Well, I'm saying there's an entire 1.1 scope of work.
I see.
Which has many services. I guess it elaborates on that paragraph.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry.
When you say, okay, you're referring to page 11, which elaborates on
the introductory paragraph. Page 10 is
the
introductory paragraph, but then there's a whole section of the scope of work.
All right.
Services to be provided.
Okay.
Right, which is what we're looking for.
Okay. Go to page 31, section 2.5. At the top, last sentence. GVB shall review and determine whether an offeror has the necessary qualifications, staffing, management, and experience required to properly conduct the work in accordance with all applicable laws, statutes, and regulations. So when we're the reference here to experience is the experience that's defined and discussed in section 1.1 of the RFP. I'm sorry, would you like me to repeat it?
Was it a question or
yeah, yes.
A statement?
I said it's the experience that's referenced in section 2.5, the experience that's defined in section 1.1 of the RFP.
Correct.
Okay. Let's talk a bit about the evaluation. We'll go to page 28, directly to page 28 of this exhibit one. The process of evaluation. So you select the evaluation committee as a GM?
Correct.
All right. And the committee comprised of, for this particular RFP, were Teletaitagui. Forget the first name. Navaristo.
Norman Navaristo.
And
Anistek.
And the two others were Gina Kono and who's the last name? Sam Shinohara. Okay.
Correct.
And they all employees of GVB?
No, only Gina Kono and Teletaitagui.
Okay, and Sam is not.
He is not.
And also Mr. Navaristo. Correct? Avaristo.
Analista.
Analista.
Yeah,
sorry, apologies.
Yeah.
Where is Mr. Where does Sam work?
United Airlines.
Okay, what is his title do you know?
He's the managing director.
All right. And Mr. Avaristo?
Analista. University of Guam. I don't know his exact title, but
why did you choose him?
He was recommended by Pilar, and he had served on some of the marketing committees. I mean, he's a very, very experienced marketing professional in the industry, well known.
But you're not sure what he does at UOG?
I know what he does. He does marketing and PR and events for the university.
Okay.
For example, I think they have their founders ball this Saturday. He's the organizer.
Okay. So, with respect to this evaluation team, you selected the four, and what happened after the proposals were submitted?
They were evaluated, the copies, hard copies were evaluated by the selection committee, and then following that, we invited the three top proposers for the we invited three of the proposers to come in and do an interview in person for the evaluation committee.
Okay, so this is the oral presentation you're referring
to, right?
Okay. And let's just break this down. So the proposals came in on February 6th, correct? 8th, excuse me. February 8th, thereabouts, 2016, correct?
I don't have it.
I'll represent to you that was the deadline.
Sure.
Okay. And so they were reviewed by whom?
What do you mean?
Who would review it? Do you review it?
So our procurement marketing analyst for Chris would do the administrative review, and then they would be evaluated by the panel.
I see. When you say she does the analyst review, can you kind of expand on that? What does that mean?
Yeah, so we would, as per statute, we would open up the proposals. We do the opening, and then after that, we would do the administrative review to make sure that the included affidavits and other such requirements of the...
So when you say administrative review, just make sure it's compliant. All the exhibits and affidavits are attached.
Correct.
And that's what Christine does. All right. Does she put together a memo at that point of saying this, a checklist?
Yep.
She has that. What is that called? It's just. Do you have a name for that document?
I think it's the administrator of the checklist.
Okay. Do you know if that was produced?
It should be in the file.
Okay. And so that, after administrative review, then what's the next step?
They would schedule the rating for the committee to come in and rate.
This is the evaluation.
Evaluation.
Okay. Do Do you at any point look at these proposals?
I didn't look at them.
Okay. So Christine Lozama took them first, did her admin checklist. And then they went into the next step was to have the evaluation committee review them, correct?
Correct.
And where does that happen and how does that happen? Can you describe that?
You know, they met at GBB and they went over the proposals and scored them.
Okay, and when you say it's like in a conference room, right?
At our main conference room.
And where are the copies kept?
They're all kept in my office. And
are there copies made electronically or hard copies made?
No, but we asked for an original plus a certain number of copies to be provided.
So they would get, the committee would get their, the evaluation committee in this case, would they get their own copies?
Yeah, they would have a copy of it, correct?
Yeah, and that would be, I think in the submission it says please submit sets here. I thought I saw that. Is it 7 sets or 5 sets? So quite a few sets, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what? One of the, each of the evaluators would get a copy.
Mm-hmm. During that period when they're evaluating, they don't take it with them.
But they can take it into their office with them, right?
To their office, no.
The office.
No, they look at it in the conference room, and then when they're done, they return it to the box, and then it goes back into the office.
So when you say there's a box, so it's a like a banker's box, and is that how you keep the records?
Yeah.
The proposals, okay. Does anyone is your door open? Anyone can come in?
No, that's why we lock my keeping my door locked for safekeeping.
Okay. But when you're off filing, it's locked too. All right. All right. So when the committee meets, they review these proposals, then what happens?
In this case, they would have to, they scheduled the oral presentations, so they came back and met again to hear the oral presentations.
Okay, but in terms of the evaluation process, does that take a couple of hours, lunch, do you have lunch together? I mean, what are we talking about?
I wasn't there at that particular one, but it depends on how, you know, we give each evaluator the time they need to properly evaluate. So if they take all day, it takes all day.
But typically, do you have a sense of how long it takes?
It kind of depends on the particular RFP. You know. Like a couple, I mean, you know, a few hours. You know.
Okay, and then they would score the proposal at that meeting.
Yep.
Okay. And the score sheet, evaluation score sheet, what would happen to that?
We would keep the score sheets.
Would they turn it into someone?
Yeah,
like
with Chris Lizelle.
They would turn it into
Yeah,
Chris?
And we also have someone from our administration accounting department sitting with the panel over there.
I see. Okay.
So it would be Chris Lozama plus one of the accounting staff.
And who would it usually be?
Usually Lorette Perez or Rose Kramer.
Okay. So, all right, so they, and then it's tabulated, right? Who does the tabulation?
Chris Lozama.
Okay. So Chris would collect it and tabulate it.
Correct.
And then she would then prepare a report. Correct. Right? And so what happens to those evaluation score sheets?
They would be kept with the committee.
Okay, but she has to work with it, Christine, so she would take them.
Yeah.
Work
yeah.
at her desk, yeah. wherever she works. And then when she's done, she would turn them to you.
Correct.
Okay. And so she was the author of a evaluation memorandum, right?
Correct.
All right. And we'll get to that in a minute. But so after evaluation's done, then the next step is, I think you said, the oral presentations. So how does that, what happens? Who coordinates all that?
It would be done, Chris would kind of schedule the time. working with the marketing department to do the oral presentations and really notify the proposers to have time to do the presentation.
Okay, and that would be all four proposers?
I think there was only three that we invited to do the oral presentation.
Right. So you rank them after the evaluation, the evaluation of the proposals. You rank the top three, and then you notify the top three. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I think there was someone whose submission was quite low and lacking, so instead of inviting them to come out for...
So he wasn't invited, or it wasn't
they
invited.
Invited.
I think that was it Edelman?
I think it was Edelman.
Edelman? All right. But you notify them that it wouldn't be invited.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, and it was same time invited everybody else.
Correct.
Okay. So we have three presenters, right? And the presentation took place on February 16th, does that seem right?
I was not at the presentation, but do you have it there, Tom?
Yeah, I'm just going to...
Yeah.
It's not a trick question.
Yeah. Tom, you have it there, 25th?
Yeah. So let me... there's so many dates in here. So I'm going to... excuse me.
It's 25th.
I have here the chronology and...
Will this be another exhibit missing?
Yeah, I just, you know, just I think it would help everybody to kind of keep track and then they just forgot to pull that out.
Will this be, can I make it 29?
Yes, thank you. So this is just something, this is a chronology that I put together just to help keep dates and you know, and you're welcome to look at it, all right? And I'm sorry, did Mr. Fisher have any objections?
Foundation.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Well, this contains a lot of representations of unproven fact. So, you know, subject to her laying the foundation for the dates and events.
Right. Right now you're just presenting it for identification, correct?
Yeah. And I think this is, I don't think any of this is controversial.
Yeah, but you have to admit it at this point.
Yeah. All right. So, Mr. Knight, so just to recap. So on February 16, 2016, do you recall that was when the evaluation committee met?
What date did you say?
February 16th.
Okay, yes.
That seems right? Yeah. And then the oral presentation of the evaluation committee took place on February 25th, 2016. Is that your recollection?
Sure.
All right. And the presentations began at 8:30 to 11:45 a.m. Is that your recollection?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Okay. So there were three presenters, right? The three presenters were HIC, TLK, and PROMAC, right?
Correct.
Okay. Having uninvited Edelman. Okay. So we now have, and do you recall if they were completed within that time frame?
Like I said, I wasn't at the presentations, but I'm assuming you get these from the records.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Okay, and you were on Guam. Is it your recollection you were on Guam at that time?
No, I think I was on Guam.
Yeah, and I think February 25th, that is I'll double check, but I think that's either a Tuesday or that's a Thursday.
You said we had a board meeting here, so that's correct, and it would be a Thursday.
Right. Yeah, so yeah, that's not a trick question. I think it's a Thursday. So your board meetings are usually on Thursdays, I think the second, and is it the last? The second and fourth Thursdays of each month.
Correct.
And during those board meetings, you would have, GVB would have subcommittee meetings as well?
No.
No? Or they're just reports from committees?
Probably, Probably committee reports, yeah.
And when would these committee meetings take place?
You mean the subcommittees?
Yeah.
Different times during the month.
So they set it themselves? Or is there a designated time?
The committees set it themselves.
I see. And so there were like, there's a Korea committee, there's a Japan committee, so, and maybe there's a FESPAC committee or something. So these committees would meet up on their own?
Yeah, I think there's 11 subcommittees.
And they would report to the
Yeah, they provide the minutes to the main board.
Would they appear at the hearing? I mean, the board meetings?
The committee, well, the committees are chaired by board members.
Right.
So those board members that chair that committee would report the committee reports.
And so in the case of Korea marketing, the board, the chair of this, is it a subcommittee or just committee? Committee.
Yeah, a subcommittee of the main board. Yeah, so there is one, yeah.
Yeah, would that be Bart Jackson? And yes. And then did he have a deputy or number two?
Yeah, the vice chair is Mr. M.
M, and that's the gentleman, they were both in here earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's talk quickly about the board. I may direct you to, we're at Exhibit 1 still, Section 3.1, please. And I think that is on page 33. And my question is, with respect to this section, of course, so you're familiar with this RP, so this is the selection committee, which is the evaluation committee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And after evaluation committee completes their evaluation, and reading this from 2.4, compiled to present a cumulative score with recommendations to the general manager, then at that point you would review that information. Correct? And that would be the evaluation memo. That information would be contained in the evaluation memo.
Okay.
All right? Yes? So
sure.
If you don't mind, say yes or no. Okay. All right. And this evaluation memo is directed to you?
Yes.
It's prepared by whom?
The management analyst.
Christine Lizama. All right. And then the next sentence, it says, the general manager shall then request a board of directors approval to enter into negotiations with the best qualified offeror. See that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what happens next is then you would present, as the general manager, present that to the board, the results of the evaluation committee's findings, if you will, or rankings. And then the board would approve that, and you go to the next level of negotiations. Is that correct?
No. We just need the board to authorize the highest rated score and then authorize me to negotiate a contract with them. So we never present the actual memo to the board.
Okay, but do you present the basis for the board, some kind of factual basis for the board to authorize you as the GM to go to the next step of negotiating. Say, look, we've got three rankings, and this is the basis for that, based on, you know, evaluators' recommendations.
No, the motion is to authorize the GM to negotiate and contract with the highest rated proposal, as okay. just stated in here.
Let me re-ask the question, just so there's no misunderstanding. When you, as a GM, present, make a presentation to the board in order to get a decision or to pass a resolution in this case, how do you do that?
I present that motion that I just mentioned.
Yeah. So let's say the motion is to spend $1 million, all right? What would you do? What kind of information would that board require to either to vote on that, for the board of directors to vote on that motion?
It's kind of an open-ended. What do you mean spend $1 million on project or contract? What do you mean?
Let's say on FESPAC. Say, I've got a motion, I want to spend $1 million on FESPAC, okay? What would you have to present to the board in order for a board member, one, to properly exercise his fiduciary obligations, two, to make a knowledgeable decision in voting on this resolution, and three, to just understand what the transaction's about?
It's kind of an apples and orange question, because you're talking about a procurement issue versus a budget issue, you know, the level of information and so forth is different.
I would like you to answer that question. I you know, whether it's apple and oranges, I think the public auditor can decide, but just please answer the question. What information would you need to provide to a board member, to the board, for them to vote on that resolution?
They would just need a motion, right? At the minimum. They may need more information, they may not, but it's just, it depends on what they require.
Okay, as a general manager, I'm sorry, I've seen you kind of look at counsel. Was there something you needed from counsel?
It's just kind of in my line of sight. I can turn my chair more
this is
okay, I was just asking.
I'm going to enter an objection. This is on the record. She's making an insinuation that I'm signaling a response to the witness. I am not.
I will move on.
This is my chair. My chair is pointed at Tom, so
it's okay, Mr. Denai. We can move on.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thank you. So, Mr. Denai, so in our...
I'm not trying to be difficult, but it's a very wide general question that you're asking. If I want to spend $1 million, maybe they just need a motion. Maybe they need a 100 million, you know, 100-page report with details. I mean, it just
Who
depends.
Makes that determination, what they need in order to make
the
that
board
decision?
We need to make the determination on what they need to.
And you as a general manager don't feel compelled to present information before you ask for a resolution to spend $1 million?
For a resolution to spend, like a spending resolution? Yeah, I'm sure you need detail. I think on this one, what you're asking for is...
No, I'm just focusing on my question.
Oh, okay.
Let's focus on that, please.
A resolution to spend $1 million. You know, it depends. Maybe the motion is so obvious that there was a major disaster and, you know, we got to decide in a second to spend $1 million because there was a plane crash and we needed to do something, and we didn't have the time to come up with a 100-page report, but the need was so great that we presented the motion and it was so obvious to everyone that it needed to be spent. Or maybe we did need to provide the detail and spend weeks of working on a report and then present that to the board and have subcommittee meetings and do a public hearing, you know, reach out to the membership and survey them. I mean, you know, it just depends. I mean,
you are aware.
Could I interject here?
Yes.
just to clarify
sure.
for my own mind, because I've been listening to different. Does GVB have a delegation of authority? In other words, at what level does you as the general manager can approve on your own versus what level has to be approved by the board? That's my question. And it's normally called a delegation of authority. I'll give you an example. Under the PUC, the general manager of GPA can approve on his own up to $250,000 on his own. Anything above $250,000 has to get approval by the board. However, anything over $1 million has to be first approved by the PUC before they can.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by delegation of authority.
Ma'am, in this case, though, for GPB, because we have our board and then we have all these marketing committees or different committees, then they set the budget, so forth. So it's kind of all pre-approved. So for example, for Korea, we would have, say, $100,000 for Korea marketing services. So my authority would be within that specified amount in that category.
But even within GVB, I mean, GPA as an example, and I know GPA a bit more, even, and the board approves the budget, but still, after the budget is approved, the board still has to approve if something is in excess of the manager's delegation of authority.
Yeah, there's no specific number.
Okay, there's no specific number by
yeah.
GVB.
Yeah, but just within the budget that's set by committee.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's very.
So you could, I apologize.
Yeah.
So you could approve $100,000 or $1 million if it's in the budget.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
But for example, if that $100,000 for Korea services was, and I needed $200,000, I would have to go back and get that change made by.
But if it's within the budget.
If it's within.
But there's no fixed amount. Okay, thank you.
So there, if I may follow up on those are very good questions. I mean, there's
normally there's a standard delegation of
right.
authority based on a fixed amount, regardless.
Right. So actually, it's not just an amount. There is no, Mr. Denai, there is no specific delegation of authority that exists. The document that says. General manager of GVB, whoever that may be, has the authority to sign contracts for $100,000 without board approval. There is no document that exists in that manner. I'm saying not $100,000, but just to use that as an example. There is no document that delegates authority to a GM of GVB, to your knowledge.
Yes. Sorry,
okay, I shouldn't use double.
Yeah, what's
okay.
the question?
Are you aware of any document that delegates authority, spending authority, to you as the GM of GVB?
Yeah, the spending authority is set by our enabling legislation and our bylaws as well. So it has a specific about the duties of the GM. I think you referenced that earlier.
Okay, so that's what you're referring to, right? The enabling legislation? This so happens I have a copy of it. So, so if you don't mind taking a moment to review this. All right, I will represent to you that this is Exhibit 30, and this is the Section 12 GCA, GVB, a portion of the Guam Visitor Bureau's enabling legislation. And I will direct you to, on the bottom of this document, if you look at it, it's page 10, there's a page 10 on it. And there's a subsection 9108. See that? It says general manager. Okay. So if you don't mind taking a moment to review this, basically this talks about your authority, right? And your job, your duties. Can you just take a moment to see if there's anything there that says you have a specific delegation of authority to sign contracts for any amount whatsoever?
For signing contracts specifically?
Mm-hmm.
approving demands for payment of obligations of Bureau within purposes amount to authorize by the board.
I'm sorry, which section are you referring to? Okay. All right, but that's subject to board approval, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not what I'm asking. I mean, we all agree that the board approves you can do it. That's not in dispute.
Sure.
Is there anything in this section that gives you a specific authority, delegated authority to sign contracts for any amount whatsoever?
I'm sorry, what is the question?
I'm just concerned, Mustang. I mean, I think I know where you're going with this, and I think you can make the argument that, you know, he didn't have this authority based upon this enabling legislation, but
I'm just
concerned that you're asking him, you know, to make a legal determination regarding what, you know, his authorities are to...
I appreciate that. So, Mr. Denai, I mean,
yeah.
You testified that earlier that you had authority specifically in response to my question, whether you had a document that says, gives you specific delegation of authority to spend money. And you refer to the enabling legislation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm just showing it to you. And I understand you're not a lawyer. I'm asking for legal opinions. Is there anything that you think that would give you that specific delegation authority? Because you said it was an enabling legislation.
I don't know, but that's what I mentioned before. Talked about approving demands for payment obligations within the purposes and amounts authorized by the board.
Okay, so that's it?
That's what I see.
Okay.
That section of this, of what you handed me.
Okay. All right, so going back to board approval, okay, and we were focusing on section 30, exhibit 1, page 30, section 2.4.
I'm going to object to this line of questioning. I'd ask for an offer of proof. She's asking procedures post-award. I understand this appeal goes to the propriety of the award itself. And my question then is, what is the relevance of this entire line of questioning? It seems to me to go to the question of whether or not the automatic stay was appropriate because there was no contract.
I think that the argument is that the contract is void ab initio because the procedures were not followed in the RFP.
Okay. I assume that's
Do you want to add anything for the record?
That's
okay.
Agreed. Okay, may I proceed? Are you aware that this contract, the RFP that we're talking about here, involves expenditure of over $2 million?
Am I aware that what?
This contract we're talking about, this RFP,
sure,
involves expenditure on an annual basis of over $2 million.
I don't think it's over $2 million because I think the creative budget was 1.9.
Okay, sorry, a little under $2 million.
Yeah. Yes?
Just to clarify, is that on an annual basis?
Annual.
1.9 is
the Korean budget, Korean marketing committee budget in totality. What the service provider spends of that total number is somewhere within that 1.9. I don't know. I don't know if it's more like 1.5 or so.
Okay. So that 1. So the this contract, it's not a small contract. It involves expenditure of $1.9 million. And I think last year, if I may check with you, was it 1.9 million?
For the committee, the budget of the whole thing, but it doesn't all go through the contract.
Right, I will get to that. I understand that. So the Korea budget involves the expenditure of $1.9 million. I was trying to be very precise about that.
Yeah.
I understand that it's not going to him.
Yeah.
Okay, and that he had the winning proposer, the agent, would get a fixed fee, there may be a little bonus, but he would, the agent would also spend money on behalf of GVB, incur cost and expenses to promote GVB in Korea or Russia, wherever it may be. And that's where the remaining of the budget comes out of.
Well, for the contract specifically, they have the their service fee, retainer
mm-hmm.
fee, and then there's an out of they have a out of pocket budget, yeah, where they would get reimbursed for costs that they spent. You know, if they spent for a trade show booth in advance and paid for that, then they submit those invoices to us, and then they get reimbursed for those expenditures. That's how that contract works.
Right, but the expenditure is a big part of. But it's when you say the 1.9 million, like last year they spent 1.9 million, that money, except with the exception of the fixed fee and any bonuses that it's paid to the agent, the remaining portion are contracts that he enters into with other service providers and vendors, and he gets, and those get paid out of the budget.
Correct, yeah. But what I'm just trying to say is that 1.9 doesn't go through that contract. Maybe, I don't know what's exactly, 1.1 or 1.2 or something.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so it's, would you say it's roughly in a neighborhood of about $100,000 a month? Thereabouts.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and that would include the fee. And I think his was, is it at one point, $20,000, $30,000, and then the remaining balance would be expenses that are incurred by the agent on behalf of GVB.
Correct.
Okay.
Ms. Tang, just for clarification, how much was the fixed fee approximately?
There are different ones for different contracts, so I think.
No, for your client.
At the time of termination.
How much was the fixed
fee? $20,000 a month.
The fixed fee was $20,000 a month.
Right.
Plus
and then
expenses.
Right. And then if they hit a certain, I guess, PAX, passenger, what is it, arrival number, then
mm-hmm.
they get a little, nice little bonus. And
then they get a bonus,
yeah.
Yes.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay, right. It's tied to.
So under the, just for clarification, just for my edification, so the fixed fee portion of TLP's past marketing contract was approximately $20,000 plus expenses plus whatever other incentives are in there. Correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to just clarify in my mind.
Sure.
So going back to 2.4, after the evaluation committee completed its rankings, did you ever make a presentation to the board and say, look, this is the recommendation of the ranking by the evaluation committee. Please approve the next step to go negotiation. Did you ever make that presentation?
We did the motion.
So you're talking about the motion that was, and I'll direct you to exhibit that was on also on February 25th, correct? And
in
the
in your timeline.
Right, it is. And if I may direct you to exhibit 7. Sorry, it's not tablet.
Exhibit 7?
Yes, please.
Page.
it's just one document. So it has it.
Exhibit 7.
I'm sorry. You know, it's maybe what we could do during the break is just bring in your tag on that.
So that's the transcript of
right.
The board meeting.
You know, we like to file them in binders, but we were told not to.
But where is exhibit 7?
So
it's midway.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's after the, if you find the. Let me see.
Before 8
the big after. Okay.
I just found it by accident.
Sorry.
It's after page 156.
Oh,
it's after 174.
It starts with partial transcription.
17,
partial transcription of February 25th.
Yeah. Look for 177 and it's shortly thereafter because then it'll be exhibit 6 and then exhibit 7. Yeah. Look for after page 176 or 177, then shortly thereafter.
You're
okay.
Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Mine was just purely
happiness. So I'll try to put a little time.
Is it exhibit six?
Seven, please.
It's
just a single page,
okay,
so it's easy to miss that.
Got it.
All right, so it's a transcription of the actual actual meeting of the board.
Okay.
On February 25th. And the time, is it your recollection that aren't most of these board meetings at 4 o'clock, start at 4?
We moved it to 3 because they kind of go quite long until like 6 or 7.
Okay. And so these are just a time is what we found, the timestamp we found on the tapes that we received from GVB. So you know, when it says 1 hour, 9 minutes, and 50 seconds, that's a timestamp on the CD that we received as part of the procurement record from GVB. Okay? So take a moment to review this. So the first comment or statement by Mr. M, he's the director, right?
Correct.
And he's the vice director of the Korea market? Vice chair in the subcommittee. All right, so he made a motion. You see that?
Correct, yes.
Okay. At the time this motion was made or this meeting occurred.
Objection.
What's the objection?
It's a best evidence objection. It sounds like we actually have the CD available, so I prefer that, because none of this has been admitted yet, of course, it's here for identification. I would ask that we actually listen to the CD, which we know is available.
Well, let's let her make her presentation, Ms. Tang make her presentation. You'll have the opportunity in Crossroad if you need an opportunity to listen to the CD in its entirety before proceeding, we can do that. But
I guess I'm just objecting to the witness being questioned about this.
May I respond to this?
Before you said, who wrote this up?
Sarah.
Okay.
Sarah, listen to the tapes.
Okay,
and she
so this is her interpretation.
This is her transcription. And I will say that this was attached to our earlier filings. I'm happy to identify it.
I recall that.
And there have been no objections to it. All right, may I proceed?
One moment. So,
yeah.
Mr. Fisher, your concern is the accuracy of the transcription.
Right, and since we have the CD available, that should play the portion of the CD and then question him as to what actually took place. So it's kind of best evidence.
I mean, you can have an opportunity to listen to it, right? And I think let's let her proceed in terms of efficiency. Let's let Ms. Tang proceed. You can have an opportunity before cross-examination, Mr. DeKnight, to make a determination whether or not you believe it's accurate or not.
Okay.
So please proceed, Ms. Tang.
Thank you. Mr. DeKnight, have you had a chance to just review this? Exhibit 7?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Yes?
Yes.
Yes, and does this refresh your recollection? Because you were at that meeting, right?
Correct.
And is this accurate to the best of your knowledge?
I'm just trusting in your assistance.
No, you don't have to trust me. Is it? Please answer the question. I just want to know, when you read this, is this pretty accurate to the best of your knowledge? You were there. It is. Okay.
To the best of my knowledge.
Yes. Okay. So I'm focusing on this transcription. Mr. M made a motion. He goes, I have a motion. I think right now we have the RFP for Korean market. So I won't read the whole thing. Right. So this is when he says he makes a motion to recommend board approval to authorize you as the chief procurement officer to start negotiations. And this is on February 25th, correct?
It says here, enter negotiation and contract.
Right. You're correct.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you, before Mr. M made this motion, make any kind of presentation or recommendation to the commission board and say, hey, the rankings, this, or here's my suggestions? How did this motion come about?
As I said, as our procedure, this is, you need this motion to authorize me to contract with the highest rated proposer. So this is necessary.
Did did you make a presentation or any statements before Mr. M made this motion?
I did not know.
Okay.
Because the idea is, you know, we have the independent ranking committee. They select the highest one independently. Then does the board need to know who the highest one is in order to make a informed decision? They would just go with the independent committee's top choice, right? If we told them the names, then there may be, oh, I like number two or I like number three, and but we have to go with the highest rated, right?
So you didn't even tell them there were who they were or any information.
It's totally independent, yeah.
You just said, hey, just approve this $1.9 million contract or $1.1 million contract to whoever the ranking person is going to be, and you should just take my word for it.
Objection.
Is that what happened?
Not take my word for
objection.
It.
Objection. Argumented.
There's an objection. So, Ms. Tan, could you please just rephrase?
I will do that. Thank you. Is it not true at the time this board meeting occurred, the evaluation committee had just finished its presentation at noon that morning? I mean, it's not the evaluation, the oral presentations were concluded at noon, roughly, that day?
Correct.
And is it not true that the information from that committee had not been collected and provided to you so that you can even, as a chief procurement officer, say, okay, we have these three top-ranking companies, and we're going to go with number one and start negotiating and contracting. You didn't even know at 4 o'clock that day or 5 o'clock, whenever this meeting started, who those three were. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. In fact, you had no idea because none of that information was available. Please respond.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I just clarify? So the information from the oral interviews, that was something separate from the calculations that were made by the committee? Or were those incorporated?
They were incorporated into the final review scores.
Okay.
So that wasn't tabulated by the time of that board meeting.
Okay.
So just to follow up, did you know who was the highest ranked from the committee at that time?
At that time, no, ma'am.
You did not know.
Basically, you're asking for authority to negotiate with whoever the committee determined was the highest ranked.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if you want to put a tab there. It might help you later on to find exhibit.
Find exhibit.
So I'm going to take you to the evaluation memo. And that is exhibit summary, exhibit 10. Let me know when you find it, please.
I have it here.
Okay. So if you don't mind putting a little tab there,
sure.
It'll be easier. That's number 10.
Got it.
Wait, can I ask what the bait stamp is on the bottom right?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 188. So have you seen this document before, Mr. Tamani?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, this is the evaluation summary of oral presentations. It consists of 1, 2, 3, 4 pages. And it's Bates number 188 to 192, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And this was prepared by Ms. Lizama to you, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And although it's dated February 25th, which I think we all agree is the date of the oral presentation in the morning, and the board meetings that started late in the afternoon, either 3 or 4 o'clock, this information contained in this memo, Exhibit 10, was not given to you on February 25th.
When was it given to me?
No, no. My question is, was this given to you on February 25th?
Possibly.
You don't know?
The exact date that this, I mean, it says 25th.
I know, yeah. But I'm saying, you went to a board meeting that afternoon, right?
Correct.
You attended it.
Yeah.
And do you recall telling the board that you had just concluded the oral presentations and they were still tabulating?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, maybe it wasn't given to me on that day, exact date, the 25th.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And let's go to Bates number 191, bottom right-hand corner.
Yes.
So you signed it on March 9th.
Correct.
I think you had just returned from the Asia route trip in Manila. Is that correct? Is that about right?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I think from the 6th, March 6th to March 8th.
Yeah.
It was some kind of a thing in Manila, correct?
Yeah, Routes Asia. Correct.
Yeah, Routes Asia.
Yeah,
Routes
correct.
Asia.
Yeah.
And so you came back on the 9th? Is that your recollection?
Sorry, I traveled so much that, yeah, but it sounds probably, maybe you're about right.
Okay. I mean, I'm happy to show you your authorization for
yeah.
travel that says,
yeah.
you know, you were gone from 6 to 8.
I didn't buy the calendar, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably right. Yeah.
Okay. And so you think you got it on the 9th and you signed it on the 9th?
Oh, I don't know. I might have got it on the 26th. I don't know. And then had it, but I did sign it on the 9th. Correct.
Right.
I don't know the exact time I received it and reviewed it.
Okay. And did you, at any point?
I received this before the 9th for sure. I signed here on the 9th.
Right.
Yeah.
And is that your signature?
Correct.
And is that your handwriting March 9th?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
But I did receive this before the 9th. I can't tell you the exact date. But.
Okay, so it's sometime after the 25th, but before the 9th. Or on the 9th, it could have been on the
9th. Yeah, I could have been at the board meeting and we kind of got on my desk that day and I reviewed it the next day.
Okay. But none of the information contained here was available to you at the time you went to the board?
Correct.
Okay. Now let's go to...
So, Ms. Tang, just to let you know, we're at 11:50. So
okay. Do you have
go your next exhibit, and then we'll break.
Okay.
And we'll resume.
Okay, why don't we...
But I think we're going to miss Taigui because of her appointment. Can
right.
we do a break in between?
Yeah, we can take
I'm
Ms.
sorry,
Taigui
she's coming
order.
Back at 1.
We can
okay.
take her out of order, and then you can
yeah.
resume with Mr. Denight.
Okay. So let me just, I'll do something quick so it won't have a long.
We can extend it to like 12:15 or so, just knowing if you think you'll finish with him.
Okay, I'd like to do that. We can just,
yeah.
so
yeah.
I'd like
that,
to maximize
that
the time.
Possible?
Yeah,
he's
might be done
with
him by
12:15. Oh.
Okay.
Just one more exhibit by 12:15.
I see.
You're
I misunderstood the question. Yeah.
I mean, if realistically you're thinking maybe another hour or 2 hours with Mr. Denight.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll try.
So.
What I'll do is try to make it concise after. I'll try to see if how tightly I can make that so we could try to wrap this up.
Because otherwise, we're going to go into additional days. Which is,
know.
You know, if it has
I,
to be
I,
done, it has to be
you
done.
You know,
but,
to be. I.
But we may be going into August.
I beg your pardon?
We may be going into August.
Do we have
He's
some time
available
tomorrow?
Next week. That's
do we
the
have
job.
Some time tomorrow, though? Can
I'm,
we have?
I'm
okay.
Available. Yeah.
So what I'd like to do is this. Let me.
I mean, maybe just do it. Do as much as you know. Do what you need to do, right?
Yeah.
But with the understanding that if we're not.
If we could
today,
go late today, I will do my best to finish this off. All right. I mean, that's. I will. Let me just try to get through this.
Right. So
we're available to go late.
Okay. I appreciate that. All right.
Bye. excited the other witnesses are.
Well, I think, well, we'll try to make this as, so can we go to Mr. Janai 11, please, Exhibit 11? Yes, please. So on the right-hand corner, base number 260 to 262.
What number?
Exhibit 11, the base number on the right-hand side is 260. It's got the 260. Okay, have you seen this document before?
Yes.
Okay, you were, I think you were copied, right? There are two exhibits, I mean, two emails on this, correct? Okay. Let's start with the one that's on page, on the top page 260. And it's dated Friday, March 4, 2016 at 8:53 p.m. So this is from Mr. Park, correct? Don Park, who is HIC, the principal, correct?
Yes.
And he states in here that he received, he says, I will review the document and respond to you as soon as possible. So do you know what document he's referring to? Is he referring to the contract?
So the marketing department has come up with a negotiation document, which is basically a checklist on the scope of work coinciding with the RFP. And they now kind of send that as a standard template to the contractors. So then I think that was the document that was attached to the email on the next page.
All right, so it's just a list of an exhibit to the final contract that they sign, the agent sign?
Is it an exhibit to the final contract?
That the agent signed?
Possibly have to double check.
Right, and it basically outlines the scope of the obligations and duties of the parties?
Correct.
Right, and then the particular person is whoever the successful best offerer or would, in this case, HIC would initial if they accept those terms.
Correct.
And this would be the comprehensive list of all of the duties of that agent for this particular contract.
Yeah, it's a list of the duties and the scope of work. Whether it's attached to the final contract,
I'm happy to show it to you, but
if you say it's there, it's there. Yeah.
Yeah. So you we're talking about the same thing, right? So
correct.
It's part of the contract.
Correct.
All right. And so he basically has to say, yeah, I agree to all these things that I have to do.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Is this just for clarification? The document we are speaking about, is it?
Right. Let's please clarify.
Yeah, I'm
going to
find it. I'm trying to get the exhibit number.
Then my second question was, is it really, really, truly part of the contract, or is it a summary of the contract?
No. Let's go to exhibit. And if you keep your finger on, I know, I need you to keep your finger on 11, or tab on 11 so you can go back to it easily. And then jump to Exhibit 3, which is the end of, there are two, Exhibit 1 is the RFP, Exhibit 2 is HIC's proposal. So you probably have to go in probably about an inch and a half. Exhibit 3 is a copy of HIC's contract, and it begins with 229 on the right-hand side.
After HIC?
I'm sorry, if you just look at the number on the right-hand corner, it's 229.
Oh, 229. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then, so that...
I don't have it yet.
Wait, what exhibit?
I'm sorry, it's exhibit three, in the right-hand corner, the base number is 229.
It's approximately the halfway point.
Thank you.
Okay, and this is HIC's contract, right?
Yes.
Okay, and this, let's go to page, the right-hand corner, page 247, it's page 247. There's, I'm sorry, 246, it's an appendix there. Scope of work.
Okay.
Okay, and starting on page 246, seven through 254. This basically establishes the duties of, the basic terms of the contract, right?
Yes.
Okay, and this is these initials you see here, PSD, that's Mr. Park Se-dong.
Yeah, the scope of work, correct.
Right, and he initialed it by initialing, he's saying, I agree, correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we'll refer to this as Appendix A to the HIC contract.
So just for clarification, Ms. Tang, so the emails that we saw earlier are from March 4th.
Exhibit 11.
And then March 11th is the date of the contract, but the exhibit that's attached on page 247, that was transmitted on March 4th.
Correct.
And Mr. DeKnight, you agree with that?
Correct.
Okay, so if I may direct you back to exhibit 11.
Sure.
The beginning on base number 260, bottom corner, the bottom email from Gina to Don. She sent an email, it says, and there's a bold, and it continues to the next page. It says she sends it to Don and copies you and a bunch of other people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was sent on March 4th, 2016. At the very top, it says, this email says, this communication is being sent to you at the instructions of GVB General Manager Mr. John Nathan DeKnight. And then it goes to the next page, which is date number 261. You see that?
Yes.
Okay. And in this email, basically notified him that you attach the, what we call the Appendix A, correct? That was found in exhibit.
That's the scope of work.
Right, exhibit three.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked them to place initial the space provided, or she did, for the contract offered price and the itemized expected requirements. Did you give her those instructions?
You know, there was a, this email was sent on a Friday night, I think, or that Friday evening. Gina had come and spoke to me about, you know, moving forward with this. Our Chris Lizama, our management analyst that handles procurement, was out, and so Gina, what she was asking me is if she could send this document to the highest rate proposer, HIC. I said go ahead, but I was more for her to send it with all the notices when Chris returned, but she went ahead and sent it to him that evening, but I would have preferred her to send it with the notices when Chris got back.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Did you direct her to do this then? The answer is yes.
I didn't direct her to send it. I didn't want her to send it directly. I wanted her to send it with the notices when Chris got back, but she took it to mean I'll go ahead and proceed and send it this evening.
Okay.
Friday. So that was
8:53 p.m. at 9 o'clock on a Friday evening.
Yeah. Gina works. Yeah. So you know, we both were late workers. We had discussed about moving forward. And so my instructions were to, she had asked about the scope of work and sending it to the highest rated proposer, HIC. I said, yeah, that's fine. What I meant was send it with all the notices at the same time when Chris gets back. She took that to mean just send it that evening, so she sent it that evening.
I see.
Okay, so you're not denying you gave instructions. You're saying my instructions were different and she misunderstood.
Correct.
All right, but this is March 4th, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Did you at any time between March 4th to March 10th correct this supposed mistake of genius and tell her, hey, you know what, you were copied, everybody was copied. You shouldn't have, you forgot to notify these other people. You claim that those were instructions. So did you at any time between March 4th to March 10th say, correct those instructions, fix it?
I think Attorney Fisher submitted Pilar, who was traveling, saw this email. She was also CC'd her, Pilar Leguanya. So she had responded to this email on Saturday, the next day, to have Gina send, or have us send all the notices. So she did email Gina back, and I think we provided you that those emails.
And that's the one with the gaps, right? With those those missing dates.
That's the complete email. We'll go ahead and, you mentioned it, so we'll go ahead and double check it. But you know,
it actually says hidden text. It says missing.
Yeah. Yeah,
so.
No, but I had hit.
I'm sorry.
I had print all.
Which document are we speaking about?
You're talking about a subsequent email on the Saturday from Pilar.
Yeah, the one we provided.
So Friday is the date of Exhibit 11. Saturday would have been an email from Pilar Leguan. Yeah, yes.
Which is not
addressing.
My understanding though is he is referring to a submission that was made within the last couple of days. And if we could just identify the document.
Is that the submittal from GDB?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, you can testify. You know, Mr. Fisher, you're testifying to that email. I guess you can present it right in your presentation, that this is the email that he was referring to.
Well, if he's going to be examined on it.
Right.
Do you want to identify it?
I would like to, okay, if I may. All right. To the extent that you're going to use any, I would object to any use of any incomplete chain emails. And if I'm asking him from his recollection. My question was, between March 4th and March 10th, when the offerors were finally notified, received their non-selection letter, did you at any time, you, correct this mistake? Or is correct, tell her, hey, notify everybody?
Yes.
When did you do that?
That's what I was trying to tell you. Her direct supervisor, Pilar, sent it in the email on Saturday, and then I had talked to Gina about Chris was returning that following week. I said, you need to notify everyone. So that's why when Chris got back, she worked on those notifications and sent it out, I believe that Wednesday, Thursday.
It's March 10th.
So.
That's the answer.
Well,
yeah. Okay.
Well, I'm still going to, for the record, I'm going to object. This is entirely misleading. This was a March 5th email that was provided to counsel. For TLK, which clearly shows what
Objections.
Mr. Denite has testified to. That's in all of our possession.
Okay.
I understand that we cross-examined.
Your objection for the record and then respond. So go ahead and make your objection, Mr. Fisher.
Thank you. Want me to restate it?
If you feel it needs to be clarified.
Thank you. We provided a March 5th email from Pilar Leguanya to Gina Kono, which instructed her to do just what the gentleman has testified to. Letters to all other bidders should also be formalized.
Okay.
So it's not, I don't want to use the word, but it doesn't fully explain what has gone if we don't refer to that as well.
Okay, just so you know, I mean, so the parties know, I think it's clear that he's testifying to an email, and I get dated the following day,
yes.
Corroborates what his testimony is, and it will be up to you whether or not you want to submit that, subject to Ms. Tang's objections regarding completeness.
Okay, but it's already in the record. It was provided as attached to a notice yesterday.
Objection,
right, but
it
hasn't. It hasn't been admitted into evidence. And
for the purpose of the hearing, I agree.
Right.
But it's in the record.
It's been submitted as part of the record.
Yes.
I mean, all of these exhibits, none of them have yet been admitted, right?
That's my understanding.
Do you want to break or do you want to keep going?
No, I want to finish. If I may, just two minutes. All right.
Sure.
So I just don't, just because there's this little side discussion, I just want to make sure. So March 4th was the email to Mr. Park, right, from Gina, and then I asked you between March 4th and March 10th, when the other offers were notified of non-selection, did you ever contact or instruct Gina to send these notices out. And I think your response was, you think you did, or Pilar jumped in.
Pilar sent the email on Saturday, and then the next workday, that was Monday or Tuesday, I talked to Gina about working with our procurement person who was coming back that Tuesday or so to make sure that we notice everyone and get those out.
Can I direct you to Exhibit 10, please? We go to base number 191. Is it not true that you gave instruction to proceed with notices on March 9, 2016?
Correct.
Okay. These are the notices that went out to the offers of non-selection. Yes or no? You're shaking your head. I just want to make sure it's
accurate. What is the question?
These were the notices of non-selection that were being sent.
Both selection and non-selection.
Okay. That's what
this is all notices.
Okay. This is a good place to break.
Okay. May I ask for clarification? What were we just referring to?
Exhibit,
you said base 191?
Yeah.
Exhibit
10. 191.
Yeah.
Is it 191?
We said the 10191, the last page of exhibit. Oh, the next to the last.
So, before we break, so for clarification, so this time we're going to go with, we'll take Ms. Tite Tugui out of order.
Sure.
And then, you want to go back to Mr. DeKnight?
Yeah, because I think he's more important, really, for now. And I understand a compressed time. If I had to pick, I would rather have him understand.
Okay, so I'm just thinking of notifications to the other waiting.
Okay,
waiting.
So
tell us when you come back. Or do you want to finish?
No, she's not available until after 3, right?
She has to be finished before 3. So we'll do her.
Let's come back 1 o'clock,
yeah.
And then if we could push Mr. Vault. Well, he's on notice on call anyway, right? So he's not going to come right down here.
We just want to make sure he doesn't come here at 1:30.
Let's just let him know that we're not, until they get a call, maybe we'll give them 30-minute heads up or something, or an hour heads up. Because I don't want them to have to, come down with traffic. Okay, so shall we come back at 1?
We'll come.
Yeah.
Could we start at 1?
I'm happy to. I'll be here at 5:50. I mean 12:50 if the door is open.
It's 12:10 now.
Okay.
So we'll start exactly at 1. I'll be back
at 1 o'clock with
you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
all right.
Let's go off the record.
We're off the record at 12:10 p.m.